Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. Okay, there's been a lot going on in the world today with social unrest, with wars, with threats of wars, with this attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Every corner we turn, there is something new we have to deal with and tackle. And for a lot of DEI practitioners, this is really a hard time to kind of work through and live through. And so I wanted to return to one of the things that we did a lot of in season one, which was talk to some therapists that can really help us garner some skills and some competencies on how to deal, how to manage during these times. And so today I have Dr. Rebecca Eldridge with us. She's a psychotherapist that really helps us deal with compassion, self-compassion. So Dr. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before, for those that may not know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about you and how you got into doing this work?
Absolutely. Well, I am a psychologist and I have focused on multicultural issues since my training over 20 years ago began, and that's looked different ways over time, and each experience really builds on another, so that the more I learn, the more I grow, the more I'm talking to people, the more I'm seeing the depletion, the compassion fatigue, the burnout, the strain of the people that are invested in change making, that are addressing the social and racial injustice. And so my services really at this point support their well-being. How do they center what they need to be whole, joyful versions of themselves so that they can continue to not only be healthy and enjoy their lives, but continue to have the impact that they're having within the systems?
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate that because this is hard work. And I say that almost every episode, right? This work is very hard. And I've been very cognizant of making sure we talk about, you know, what are you things you do to fill your cup? Like, that's always the last question that I ask people, because I do want this to be something that is kind of central. Like, how do we center ourselves as we are often putting others in front of our needs and putting others in front of our wants and desires? And so I find that especially now, I'm seeing so many different practitioners reacting in different ways, like different than before. You know, when we were prepping for this, one of the things that I said to you was, I'm seeing two things, right? I'm seeing the burnout that we typically will see that often happens, but I'm also seeing people checking out, right? Like, they are deciding to walk away. Mm-hmm. And so can you tell me what is different this time than probably previous times?
Well, it's changed a lot over the past 20 years, even, you know, what I've seen, but I think you're right. There's so much burnout, there's so much depletion. So whether people are making a conscious choice to leave and walk away, or whether they're just feeling like they're barely scraping by in the day-to-day that they're in, the average tenure of somebody in a chief equity officer or related position, I think, is down to less than 2 years. So
18 months, yeah.
Yeah, it's so, and it keeps getting shorter, right? And so I think one of the things that I see, and we mentioned this before too, is just the socio-political climate that we're in, where there's this hyper-fixation on using DEI as like a catch-all for controversy. Mm-hmm. And you know, the level of hostility around it, just blatant, outright hostility, is so high right now. Mm-hmm. And the emotional labor of staying in the work is so great. And I think that a lot of those things have certainly been there historically, but right now there's so many catalysts for it where every aspect is politicized over and over again.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, you said like, we've been here before. These things, there's always been an anti, fill in the blank, right? Anti-civil rights, anti-affirmative action, right. Anti-human rights arm. And it's always been political, you know, and it's interesting because this feels a little different. And so what I'm seeing is this, it's hard to say, right? Like it's almost this visceral reaction that is embodied in how people are reacting. There is no common ground. There is no, you know, like, let me at least hear your side or understand where you're coming from. It's very, very black and white. And so as someone that does this work, and, you know, I've really been trying to think through, okay, like, how do I want to approach this? As someone who is really trying to focus on the humanity of it all and how we all are very different and how collectively there's power in our differences, it's difficult to kind of constantly either face that opposition or feel like you have to watch your back because, you know, there's a threat that's constantly there. And that threat is different. Like this is now, I know practitioners that have physically been threatened, right? Like they've been doxxed on social media. Mm-hmm. And so the threat is very real now. And so when you think about this I'm seeing and hearing all of this, it does cause a level of anxiety. It does cause a level of angst. What are some things that you're seeing that people are really struggling with right now? And how are you helping them kind of get past some of that?
Oh, there's so much to say about that. What I'm seeing and how to help people get past. So we'll dive in. I'm thinking as you're talking, like I just wrote my newsletter for this week speaking about the power and the wisdom in our emotions, but also how unsafe many systems are for feeling and expressing those emotions in healthy ways. And so I'm seeing, for example, clients within a chrysalis group that I lead where they're dealing with the range from a really supportive leadership structure and how nourishing that is in one case, all the way to the experience of feeling like I can't stay here because, you know, there's the people that say that they support this equity position, but then forget to ever mention it, bring it up, included in any of the branding or documentations, right? Mm-hmm. Or start to put like forced decisions onto this person, like this person needs to be on your team, even though that's not what they're participating in the decision around, right? Mm-hmm. And just that constant undermining and the toll that that takes. The hypocrisy around experiencing people saying, oh yeah, we want you to do this work and we value that you're here doing this work. But then every other decision and interaction undercutting that message.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's crazy making for people and the toll, the thousand cuts that we speak of, right, with microaggressions of having to go through that assessment over and over again of when am I going to put the effort in to say something to this person? When is it not even worth it?
Yeah.
Having to pick your battles and doing that then in a state of threat, like you're saying, where it's not just emotional threat, but even physical threats. And your body is reacting to both as if it's physical threats, because that is how our nervous system works.
Yeah.
Right. So I work a lot with the nervous system perspective and just understanding, like, where do you have those safe places? How absolutely essential. I remember so many times where people go from, you know, having to restrict and hold in those emotions because it's not safe in so many other environments. And then they get to a space where they can let it out, and just like the relief that floods through them of having at least some outlets to be able to process and name and validate what they're feeling. Like, yes, it's so normal, right? And we talk about so many of the people in conversations that I'm having right now around the angry Black woman stereotype, right? Which does so much damage because it makes it so that it's risky to express the completely legitimate anger about the injustice in the systems. And of course, if you're connected to your humanity, if you're embodied in your emotions, and you're not only seeing or witnessing, but you're personally experiencing that injustice, then of course it makes sense to be angry, to be heartbroken, to be discouraged, to be frustrated, to be sad. Mm-hmm. And so I really work with people a lot on, if these aren't safe spaces, where are you getting that safe space? And I'm creating those safe spaces through the work that I do with clients or organizations or the Chrysalis group that I mentioned, so that people have those outlets available to them.
Oh, there's so much in what you just said. Like, I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. Ooh, yes, yes, yes. You know, one of the first things that came to mind was, again, the coach in me is, you know, it's like, what makes work, like, why does work, or what is it about work that has to be a safe space for you? Like, why is that an important thing? And I think a lot of people need to ask themselves that question, because we may be forcing ourselves to feel like work has to be a safe space. But if you're in a toxic environment, it will never be that safe space. And so I love what you were saying about finding avenues that create that safe space for you, and being okay that it's not at work, right? Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, because I remember being in a work situation, and I had a manager where two things. One, I was told that I was antisocial, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm truly an introvert. People don't believe me, but I truly am an introvert.
And I believe you.
You know, just like, I am. And how our offices, how the cubicles were set up was, there was no other space in the middle. So I had to sit on the outside, which I was fine with. But because of that, I was considered antisocial. Right. And so I'm like, but isn't the environment created?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The other thing that this, you know, one of my core values, and a lot of what I do this work right now is this aligning with my core values? Because that is what helps me figure out, okay, is this a safe space, or am I getting what I need out of this environment in order for me to feel like I can fully be myself? And the same manager was just like, well, do you trust me? And I was like, no, you come across like a used car salesman, right? Honesty is one of my core values too. But again, it was one of those things where I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel comfortable. And I articulated that. And when I would point those things out, then it came back to, oh, she's just an upset, you know, angry Black woman. And so I was like, I wasn't, but now I am, because now you're putting this.
Now I am.
Right. You know, now you're putting this on me, like you're blaming me for this. And so right. I see so much of that in the workplace, where what is happening in the workforce, right? What you're hearing from the streets in the organization, and it's being hit with, oh, well, we don't want to be sued, or, you know, we need to tone this down, or we're going to cut this program that is so essential to individuals that may not have access, right, in other ways. And so it's a challenge, because it's almost, and I say this all the time, right? It's like fighting a battle uphill, right? Pushing a boulder and having daggers thrown at your back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
you feel like it's impossible.
It is. I mean, in so many ways, it's set up to be impossible. Mm. And so, like, if you're a listener and you're considering, like, okay, can I find other safe spaces for this? Does my work need to be a safe space for this? Mm-hmm. I also think I've seen a lot of examples where there's a time limit. Like there's an expiration date on how long you can stay in a toxic environment.
Yeah.
Without severely impacting your own health, your longevity, your relationships, your emotional well-being is just one piece of it. And so thinking about those times where I've worked with people where they have done great work within an organization, they go as long and as far as they can, and they recognize that there's that point, and asking yourself, like, what is that limit for you? Like, when are you at that point? Mm-hmm. Where, and hopefully recognizing it before is at that point where you're hospitalized or you're in so much depletion that now you really do need like 6 months off, you know, cases where people got to that point, pushed through for so long and so hard. And thinking of one in particular that she felt like, okay, I need to leave. I need to just take time off. I need to recover. And then being in that situation where she left the job purposefully, not having another job lined up, but then started second guessing it after the fact, right? Like, okay, now I don't have something else lined up. Now, what are people thinking about the fact that I'm unemployed? Now, am I less desirable as a candidate because now I've had a few months unemployed? Where she had done exactly what she had intended to do, focusing on herself, on her relationships, on her health. But, you know, now there's all these after effects from it. And so really just encouraging you, if you're considering where you are in that process, to really find a space to be honest with yourself about how much is too much and how will you recognize it when you're getting close to that point.
Yeah, I love that time frame, right? Because I think so many people get stuck in the mire of, I just have to stick it out. I have to stick it out. I have to stick it out. And one of, you know, my coach, and I've talked about this all the time, like the most powerful question she ever asked me is, where do you have the most impact, inside or outside of the organization? And it took me a while to say outside the organization, but once I did, oh my goodness, it was just like the world opened up to me. And then what I ended up doing with that time, right? I gave myself a time period, was like, how can I make this time most impactful for me? Like, it's toxic. It is probably the worst work experience I've ever had, but what can I glean? Like, what are the diamonds that I can pull out of this during that time? And being able to focus on those things made that time feel like, okay, this is valuable. I'm not just sitting in this muck, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing you said, I was talking to someone recently, a couple months ago, she talked about, you know, in academia, we hear, you know, professors taking sabbaticals all the time. Like, why don't we take sabbaticals in the corporate space? And just, that's what you put on your resume. Like, took a sabbatical. It sounds fancy. Nobody needs to know what you're doing.
Exactly.
During that time. And so it's partly, it's a reframing. Like that's kind of what I'm hearing from you, is like, there's this reframing of what does time look like and what is important to me and how do I focus on those things while all of this is going on? Because I think once you could kind of center yourself a bit in the need, like, what do I need right now? You start to reframe kind of the things that are important to you, what you're willing to let go of. Like, okay, my time is done. There's no more I can do in this job. Now I can think about, okay, what's my next going to be? Or I cannot think about what my next is going to be.
Exactly. I love how you, like, that reframe that you came to with your coach, that's so powerful, right? To also not have it be, I'm either staying here and I'm making an impact, or I'm giving up on making an impact. Like, to recognize that your strengths go with you. They are fully transferable. And that if the environment that you're in is too toxic to continue to share your gifts there, there are other places where you can continue to have an impact. And the thing that I say over and over again is, there is this myth that it's this dichotomy. Our brains love to sort things into like either or. You have one or two. And I love the phrase, when you're trying to pick between two options, choose the third. You know, just that idea that, like, do not allow yourself to get stuck into thinking that you either have option A or B, and that the same thing is not a choice between either you're taking care of your own well-being, your self-care, you know, taking care of your own needs, or you're making a difference and having an impact, that those things are so integral to one another. And that it really, truly is, from a nervous system perspective, science-backed, that when you are taking care of your health and you are in your most whole, healthy, regulated state, that is where you're calm, you're clear, you're connected, you can be the most creative, the most problem-solving, the best communication skills, the most healthy. That, of course, that's going to be the state from which you can also make the biggest difference. And so just really honoring the marriage of those two.
Yeah. It's, you know, when I talk about, you know, filling your cup and what do you do to fill your cup? The other side of that is like you give from your overflow. And that's exactly what that is. Like if you're constantly feeling depleted, if you're constantly, you're not going to give your best, right? And so it's when you are your healthiest, when you are your most alert, when you are kind of on your game, that's when you can really start to give your value or show your value and give from that overflow. So Dr. Rebecca, what do you say to practitioners that are 10 toes down right now, right? They're not leaving. They are really working hard to continue pushing forward and doing this work. But they're seeing, you know, the arrows coming. They're seeing the organization probably isn't as vocal as it was a few years ago. You know, how do you help them kind of balance or even reframe or refocus, you know, what they're doing or how they're feeling?
Well, I love your question about how are you filling your cup, because I think work cannot be 100%. I mean, it's such a huge chunk of where we spend our time and our energy. And if you love your job and you're dedicated to it, that's fantastic. I love my job. I'm so fortunate to do work that I love. I still need to have other areas of my life that are also pouring into me. And so really looking at what are the pieces that fill out the edges of your life. You know, this is an analogy from chronic pain. I'll just use it for a second because I think it speaks to this as well and to what you're talking with the DEI practitioners about. If you focus just on the pain, then that becomes the entire picture. The pain stays the same, but a lot of approaches to chronic pain say, if this pain is here, how do you make your life bigger around it so that, relatively speaking, the pain feels smaller? And I think that that same thing would apply here. You know, how are you pouring into your work? Yes, but how are you also finding the spaces, the people, the activities, the sources of joy that pour into you? And I, you know, this is a question for you or for your listeners, because it may or may not be true for everybody. I'll just say that one of the things that I witness and that I know is that a lot of the people who give so much in DEI work, that's not the only place where they're giving so much of themselves. They are also people who are tending to give so much in their friendships and their family relationships and their communities and their sororities and their churches or religious affiliations. And so there's a lot of expenditure of their resources and energy. And sometimes it becomes harder to recognize, where are the places that are actually pouring back into me? And making sure that there's like some sort of a balance there. It doesn't have to be every single place, it has to be a one-to-one. But if it's a bank account, right? If you're like spending and spending and spending, at some point you have to be getting some deposits in to support that. And if you're a person who tends to be so generous, so wise, so giving that other people are constantly coming to you, then sometimes the challenge is really, where are you carving out a space that is just for you, where you're not having to show up and do something for somebody else, and you can show up and just be and receive.
I love that. I love that. And as you were talking, it just reminded me, I got an email yesterday from a former coaching client, always a coaching client. And, you know, she was like, I just want to give you your flowers while you can still smell them. Like, I just want to, you know, thank you for everything that you've done. And you've been so supportive of me, you know, and it was just one of those things that I literally was sitting there reading it. And I'm like, this is filling my cup. Like, this email just shot my cup. I mean, just to overflow. And it's just those little things, right? Because it wasn't something that was expected or anything. But when you question, why am I doing this? Or why do I continue to push this and do this? And then you get those kind of messages of affirmation, like that feels so good. And I think that for so many of us, you're spot on. It is give, and not necessarily, and for many people, and this is probably a conversation for your couch, right? Like, why do you feel you need to give so much, right? Like, what is it that has happened that you feel like you can't receive? There's guilt that comes with that reciprocity. Like when
people sometimes, that gets in the way. It makes it really hard. And it's tricky, right? Because we do know that we get joy out of giving as well. And so it's not, again, it's not an all or a nothing. It's not like you have to stop giving of yourself and only focus on you. It's like, where is that balance point? You said two things that I wanted to just share with people, because I think these are a couple of things that can be really transformative for people and are relatively easy to access and do. One is to counter the brain's natural negativity bias. And so when you receive something like that message that you got yesterday, when somebody walks up to you at work and tells you genuinely how much what you're doing matters to them and is improving their experience here, or how they feel seen and heard by having you there, right? Instead of just like being appreciative and thank you in the moment and then rushing on to the next task, to really soak that in. And what really makes a difference in the brain's wiring, makes a long-term difference, is when you can sit in the experience of something positive for at least around, well, one study showed 24 seconds. Why 24 seconds? I don't know, but 24 seconds. So, you know, if you figure like even just like a half a minute at a time, because the brain will automatically store those negative experiences. We know it does. And not only will it automatically fast track them to long-term storage, but we really tend to help that process along with how much we hash and rehash and rehash anything that we're worrying about, especially at 3 a.m. The positive experiences, they don't get that fast tracking naturally. And we tend to appreciate them for a second, and then it's on to the next challenge that we're working to solve. And so it can make a huge difference if you spend that time really soaking in, what does this feel like in my body? Yeah. Not just thinking about it. It's not just like a cognitive exercise, but like really like, oh, what's happening in my chest? What's happening with my shoulders? What's happening in my gut as I just soak this in? And you can do it immediately. You can do it as you're going to bed at night. You can do it about something that happened 15 years ago that was a moment of joy in your life, but just really bringing those in. And I think that can be a really important piece.
I love it. So I'm going to pivot now to what fills your cup? Like, you know, what are the things that you do to take care of yourself? Because, you know, I think it's just so important that we talk about these things too, because it doesn't look the same for everyone.
It doesn't. And I have a long list. I'll share a few so that I don't go on forever. I really love lately listening to music. Like, obviously, I don't listen if I'm in the middle of a session or something. But if I'm like working on paperwork or something, then I select the music that specifically fits the feelings or the mood that I'm connecting to at that time. And that is so soothing. There's something about music that's just very calming. Of course, it can be otherwise too, if you, depending on the music that you choose. Right. Nature is a big one for me. So I love getting out for walks. It's a little bit harder where I live with these short days at the moment of daylight. But whenever I can, getting out and enjoying it, even if it's kind of gray, cloudy, snowy, you know, finding things that I can do outside. And cuddling and reading with my daughter. She is in first grade. She still right now loves cuddling and reading together. Yeah. And promises me that she never wants to grow up because she always wants to be able to do this. And realistically, I see and I know that this is changing already and is going to continue to change. And nor will it always be comfortable for her to sit in my lap and read a book. So those moments of just like closeness and connection and sharing her imagination is such a nice break from the world.
I love that. I love that. So if folks wanted to get in contact with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Reaching out to me, there's a contact form on my website, which is RebeccaEPhD.com. And I love to hear from people, what resonated with you? What are you still reflecting on or mulling over, chewing up and marinating on? LinkedIn is another good way to connect with me. Same thing, any messages, questions, connections. And I do have two resources that are related to what we talked about today. And if people want to just avail themselves or those their team members of those resources, one of them is 5 Ways to Speak Up, which is specifically tailored to ways to speak up in these very tense situations and environments that we're having so much of these days. Sometimes it can help to lift the cognitive load of figuring out that stress of like, what am I going to say in this moment? To just have a couple tools that you know and that you've practiced with that really apply to a wide variety of situations and can give you more ease and calm in that process when your whole body is clutching itself, trying to keep from screaming. So that's the 5 ways to speak up. And then if you're looking for ways to move yourself back more frequently to that inner calm space that we talked about, then the inner calms site that's listed here, that is kind of a fun Mad Libs style activity where as a result of filling in the blanks, you'll receive kind of your personalized script for peaceful place and some of those anchors that you can use to more quickly and easily move back to that state where you're feeling good and you can do your best work.
I love it. We'll make sure that all of that is in the show notes for people so that they can have access to those resources as well. So Dr. Rebecca, thank you so much for this, because I think just talking about this, some people may feel seen, because a lot of people feel like, I'm the only one. So I just wanted to make sure we do this so that they feel seen, that they realize and know that they're not the only one that's kind of dealing with and going through this. Mm-hmm. But then also, I love kind of how you talk through ways that people can start to balance some things out, right? And really refocus and reframe for themselves, because we will continue to have backlash. We'll continue to have all this work coming, all of these negative things coming toward us. And we need as many folks in the battle to push this work forward. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the work that you do and sharing this with through your podcast. Mm-hmm. I think it's such an important resource for people to know they're not alone and feel seen and heard.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you to you all for watching, listening, whatever it is that you're doing with this podcast today. We always want to hear from you as well. Be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, have a good one.